Hello and welcome to Jibe Talking, the Volvo Sailing Podcast. I'm Guy Swindles, and this week we're looking back at the recent World Yacht Racing Forum. We talked to the president of the forum, Peter Gilmore, on the state of sailing and the proposed changes to the World Match Racing Tour. We hear the much heralded head-to-head with Russell Coutts and Brad Butterworth, BMW, Oracle and Alinghi in an agreement shock, while Matt Sheehan talks rigs and rigging with Hall Spa's Eric Hall. But first, as always, it's the Volvo Sailing Podcast news headlines. The build-up's underway for the Sydney to Hobart. We'll be reporting on the race in the next podcast, with Alan Briarty's RP63 Limit looking good in the preliminary Rolex Trophy Rating Series. Wild Oats and Rum keep their powder dry, while Storms hit the ISAF Sail Melbourne event. Liz Wardley loses a mast in the latest blow to her Round the World campaign. Team Origin is looking for a British venue for a round of the Louis Vuitton trophy as Auckland, Sardinia, Hong Kong and as yet unnamed Middle Eastern venue are confirmed for forthcoming events. While we say farewell to Roy E. Disney, the owner of Pie Wacket and best known for his Transpac campaigns. Now it's off to the World Yacht Racing Forum and the most eagerly anticipated meeting and the hottest ticket in town was for a head-to-head between Russell Coutts, now of BMW Oracle, and Brad Butterworth, his former colleague at Alinghi. Richard Simmons was referee.
The America's Cup has been in court and we suddenly saw the moment when we saw these machines. We saw a slideshow that gave certainly me hairs on the back of my neck came up. We saw two mates who were on other sides of the fence, and sorry, Russell, but I saw some emotion there. This feels like a Hollywood film. It hasn't felt like that since 2007. But then you add two billionaires, one from Europe, one from the USA. Russell's history in the Cup. And sure, the last 2 years have been, well, depending on your point of view, bloody ridiculous, frustrating, a shame. But right now, we could be on the edge of a most extraordinary match. But are we? If the court case today goes against either of you, will you both be racing in February for the America's Cup? Russell?
Well, I must say I'd be very surprised if the court case, if the appeals panel changed anything, but we'll be definitely ready to race in Valencia in February. If there was a venue change at this stage, we'd have to look at when we could get to the new venue.
So if the appeal is successful and it's heading out to RAC, it's looking like February may not happen.
Well, we'd obviously have to see how quickly we could set up the... basically, we want to race the Cup as soon as we can. Our position really hasn't changed since the early days.
And Brad, if the Cup is heading back to Valencia, will you be there?
Yes, yeah, we're ready to. We've got both plans. We're ready to go. We feel the same way as BMW Oracle. We want to get going.
And one more question, because today we want to drive this topic forward, as opposed to talk about the law courts. But something that was touched on in the presentations there was that I think Brad, you said it. Who wins? Who's successful in the Cup? Let's hope the Cup goes on. It doesn't go back to court. Is that what you're saying, Brad? If Alinghi lose the next Cup, it's handshake, better man won.
Yes, and that'll be the fact.
And is that how you see the next Cup, Russell? If you're not successful, it's going to be a handshake and over to Brad.
Well, one of the things that's happened recently is that there was a expert panel put in place. You know, there was three wise men, as we referred to them. Alinghi nominated one. I mean, but they had to be past America's Cup jury members. Then you nominated one, we nominated another, and then they nominated the third. And they were able to decide five major issues in 2 days. And that I would suggest that would have taken the courts months, maybe years, to resolve. And that's the sort of process that... we'd like to see. We think the fact that the jury's now been named is a great thing. We're looking forward to being able to use the jury. And I think a lot of the questions that may be open or would be open could be decided by the jury prior to the match, and therefore avoiding any of the problems that you might have if you don't do that. You avoid the court battles, and our position is certainly we want whoever wins the race on the water to then they've won it and they go on. We want to avoid the court battles. So if we can put the jury's in place now, and if we can use that jury to answer the open questions that perhaps still need to be resolved, then there's absolutely no reason why either of the teams would need to go back to court.
Does that make sense to you, Brad?
Yes, it does, yes.
So you've just agreed. This is getting good. So we're going to see the America's Cup. I think there should be a film on it. I don't know, watching that there, it's going to be sensational. So much has been talked about what's wrong with the Cup. Russell, you talked about how excited you were about the machine, about these two boats. You expressed some concern about the future being in those boats. Brad, if you're successful, would you like to see the future of the America's Cup in multi-hulls?
Well, I think you've seen that both teams have chosen multi-hulls, so that they're the fastest platform in the sport today. And maybe that size is not the right size, but I think I'm open. I think we should talk with the teams that are going to be involved next time and discuss, you know, what size boat it should be. And I think, you know, we can adapt to the rules or whatever to make these boats work.
Now, the president of the forum, and of course a key man in the World Yacht Racing Tour, is Peter Gilmore. I caught up with him after the event when he got home to Perth.
Well, I think the big changes for the World Match Racing Tour revolve around us essentially building the tour itself back up to a very prominent position, and that really means that it's going to be a more significant, franchise in terms of what the business represents and deliver for all of the events more value. Obviously, you know, that's going to be tied up in a host of different areas, such as promotion, television, a prize pool for the sailors, sort of things like that. So it's really, they're the new developments that we've been working on.
How far down the track are the plans now, Peter? Will they be ready to put in place next year?
We only got control and took over the business towards the end of October. And so what we've done is for 2010, we have basically sort of captured the 2009 business and really reapplied it. In terms of new developments, not a lot will happen in 2010. Other than we will go from two live television events to four live television events, and we will also increase the sailor prize pool from zero up to $250,000. Then for 2011, what the plans do involve is significant new development, a lot of new change in the way of bringing on new events, and we're currently in the process of examining, it was seven new events, but it'll probably be up to 10 or 12 new venues that have come forward and want to host a World Tour event, and our ambition is to probably increase that by about two events per year.
Peter, have you found that the appetite, if you like, for sailing and for this event is holding up given the current recession and everything?
Yeah, the thing that's amazed us is that the appetite is massive. I mean, what we have seen and experienced is, I think, quite unprecedented. In the past, the World Tour events have been sort of a loose grouping of events all together under one name. All of a sudden, with a little bit of direction and guidance and a new promotion, suddenly we're seeing I guess, massive new interest. I mean, the cities and countries that are coming forward and I guess making their pitch and their bid for to be a part of this is quite incredible. I mean, one of the interesting items was that the recent World Yacht Racing Forum was the special position and sort of special quality that sailing possesses, which is, you know, obviously very, you know, interesting sport, very tactical, very sort of focused, great backdrop with, you know, beaches and oceans and water, very eco-friendly, yet the, you know, sort of negatives such as a difficult sport to understand, many, many classes, many part, you know, many different sort of fragmented, like there's about seven different round the world races, for example, going on at the moment. So with a little bit of streamlining of those two sort of areas of realizing the value that we have in a promotion, promotability, together with the streamlining in terms of rationalization of events, I think there's sailing's positioned tremendously well to capture this growth, because the most interesting thing was at that World Yacht Racing Forum, we were sitting right alongside the Motor Racing Forum, and here are they looking at budgets between $300 million and $500 million just to manage their technical effort of 600 to 900 people in their Formula One teams. And even, you know, a top line America's Cup team is probably less than a quarter of that. And so to even, and if you then break that down to say a laser sailor or a above that a I guess a match racing team or a TP52 team or around the world team, the costs are far more affordable, and the effective medium, that is the long timeline that the event plays out for, tends to be a very attractive component. And so the interesting thing that I heard was that, look, the sport's all a little bit fragmented, but what you have is so has such tremendous potential. So I came away from there tremendously enthused, and, you know, I guess with the thoughts that we've got to work on our little bit, the World Match Racing Tour, and try and get it really right so that it's very understandable, it's quite clear, and can move forward in a sensible manner.
I guess the other thing that anything... Final thought, Peter, and thanks again for joining us. I do quite a lot of work with the Volvo Ocean Race, and I did notice that when you said you were looking for a president, you were looking for someone like Knut Frostat. Does the Volvo Ocean Race need to worry about you going to try and poach him?
They certainly do. I think Knut's done a fabulous job with the Volvo Ocean Race. He's really built a great business there. In fact, during the World Yacht Racing Forum, I was thinking to myself that it is now getting itself up and on par with the America's Cup as a sailing sports business. And, you know, that's largely through, you know, Knut's endeavour and drive, and, you know, it really is a spectacular business. And I think the way it is managed, all of sailing should be admiring that and looking at what they do and say, how can we learn from this? Because the great thing about Knut is he's very sharing with his IP, with his intellectual property of what, how he's gone about and how he's done it, because he sees, if I share that and people get better competitively, our business will get better too. So it's a great attitude to have, and I think absolutely to be the Volvo Ocean Race is a tour to be admired.
Peter, that's terrific. Thanks so much for joining us. For final little thought, are you doing this as a sort of running of the World Match Racing? You're going to carry on actually competing in it?
Well, I have a 3-year sponsorship from Yanmar. I've got my own team, Yanmar Racing, so we'll be out there. And as someone recently said, are they going to, you going to sort of lay down for them? I said the answer was a simple no. Be as tough as ever.
Yachting World's Matt Sheehan had a busy time of it at the World Yacht Racing Forum, but he also had time to discuss a little bit of rigs and rigging with the man behind Hall Spars, Eric Hall.
In the world of rigs and rigging, Hall Spars is one of the biggest names around. I'm with its founder, Eric Hall. And Eric, you've witnessed quite a lot of technical changes over the years. And there's a move, obviously, into carbon, and you're right at the front of that carbon. How do you see that change in the world of masts?
Well, I think it already has changed the world of the masts in the sizes. We're making masts for, it's almost 100% carbon, and these, of course, are in the medium size range racing and cruising boats up through the mega boats. I'm guessing that probably, I don't know how many years from now, but I think it's pretty clear to me that carbon masts will be like what aluminum was to wood in the end, and maybe by that time there'll be another material coming along that makes carbon look pretty normal. But I think most masts at some point, if not all masts, will be carbon.
That's really interesting to hear, and particularly interesting to hear you say that it's in the middle markets that that carbon is so predominant. Is that more an American thing? Because in the UK and in Europe, we're not seeing carbon aboard production cruisers to that extent.
Oh, well, if you look at, for instance, Mentos and stuff, you're absolutely right. There's a vast majority are aluminum masts, and we're not in that market. We're in the market where Beneteau may have a boat with an option, and then we'll have the carbon mast on that. And I'm talking about very low production, and medium would be starting at 50 feet. But, for instance, a good example is Shipman. Shipman only buys carbon masts. Anything over a small and very price-driven product that J-boats these days always starts with a carbon mast in the design. And any custom cruiser or racer, the designers aren't even thinking of anything but carbon, and in some cases may not even have something like aluminum available anymore. Somebody would have to tool up, so they're just not happening.
The revolution's already happened in the States, and I guess it's coming our way. And
I think it's in Europe just as well. Europe is really now the center of gravity of our market. The States is pretty quiet in comparison.
What are the things that are attracting people to carbon? Because, I mean, the obvious thing is weight. But is that really where the game's been played? Or are people looking at a combination of weight and additional strength or stiffness? Or, I mean, is there something else that people are trading it against?
Well, the original attraction was a huge weight reduction. The tube is almost exactly half the weight of an aluminum tube. So that's an attraction in and of itself, and that's where we started. We didn't suffer so much from it, but early on there were a lot of mishaps with the carbon masts. That's virtually been taken care of. We found that actually carbon is much more robust, much more resilient. We used to smile about the fact that as the late summer came along, things were quieting down, but they would always heat up again because somebody would have a mishap with their aluminum mast and kink it or break it, and we'd have business in the late summer just when we needed it. That all went away with the carbon. Some of the early carbon masts that we made, guys would come back from a rough race, say, we did all we could to pull the mast out of the boat, and it wouldn't come. You know. And the other part about carbon is it's got much, much better fatigue life qualities. So you'd be hard-pressed on a fatigue standpoint and an age standpoint to outlive a carbon mast, where the aluminum has any metal has fatigue problems ultimately, but aluminum also has corrosion problems. Anytime you have screws in it or stainless pieces that you have to have, things slowly get rotten with carbon. With aluminum, and anybody that's looked at a mast up an aluminum boat anywhere, any place after 5 or 8 years, it's looking pretty cruddy. Doesn't happen with carbon.
Well, that's it for this time. Season's greetings. Happy Christmas and Happy New Year to everyone who listens to Jibe Talking. Good to have you with us this year. Join us again next year, and we'll start with a look back at the Sydney to Hobart. In the meantime, remember to check in at regular intervals to www.volvooceanrace.org.